Ready to launch your business? Get started with the commerce platform made for entrepreneurs. Shopify is specially designed to help you start, run, and grow your business with easy, customizable themes that let you build your brand, marketing tools that get your products out there, integrated shipping solutions that actually save you time. From startups to scale-ups, online, in person, and on the go, Shopify is made for entrepreneurs like you.
Sign up for your $1 a month trial at shopify.com/setup.
Attention all passengers. The Uber ride for Mark and Jamal's romantic weekend will depart in 4 minutes from Platform 6. Your ride comes with a rolling countryside sunset view and a table seat ideal for playing footsie beneath. Thank you for booking your tickets on Uber.
Trains on Uber.
Busy routines can make it hard to focus on your health goals, but MedExpress offers a simple way to explore weight management treatment online. Complete our short eligibility consultation with no need for face-to-face appointments or travel. If eligible, treatment is delivered discreetly, with UK-registered clinicians offering support along the way. Visit medexpress.co.uk/podcast to get started today.
On this episode of Risk, you'll hear...
My mother looks at me dead in the eye and goes, don't think you're ever going to be this big.
And you'll hear...
Is that it? Tongues?
And you'll hear...
An agnostic's just an atheist with an open mind.
But this time you'll only hear a little bit of me, Kevin Allison, on the show where people tell true stories they never thought they'd dare to share. Okay, folks, this is DJ Freddy Fresh behind me now, and Freddy Fresh is someone you might be familiar with from the show Some Assembly Required, which is hosted by John Nelson, who is a friend of Risk going all the way back. 25 years ago, John Nelson started that show, Some Assembly Required, which celebrates audio weirdness, all kinds of sound collage and crazy mashups. I became obsessed with Some Assembly Required when I started Risk in 2009, and I was always borrowing stuff from John, and so we became podcasters who admire each other's work over the years. But John has also since gone on to produce a show called Radio Retrofit, a kind of homage to fictional radio stations of yore brought to life. It's another something you just kind of have to hear to comprehend. And recently, John reached out to us about producing something specifically for Risk, and we said sure, and sent him a few little nuggets of stories that were sent to us by Risk listeners over the years, just waiting for a home. I sometimes label stories with a question mark to say, what should we do with this? So over the course of the rest of the episode, you'll hear how three of those little nuggets finally did find their home. So here is John Nelson with an episode he made just for Risk called I Don't Know.
Good morning. Welcome to this edition of a story maybe best.
Maybe
left untold.
Maybe.
Produced here for Risk in the summer of 26. I'm John Nelson. And who am I exactly? Well, I'm nobody really, but I can talk and I can tell a story. Well, I'm a radio producer first, I guess. Well, first I'm a dad. First and foremost, that's my priority. But I do produce radio and I listen to Risk, and I've recently taken my desire to tell stories and my goal of producing a purzine into a few hours of radio, which finally did share some of the real life stories which I've been writing since I was little on the radio. And it's been fun. It's been life affirming. And sometimes that's really all you need to be focusing on. And lately, it's been feeling real important. Have you been feeling that? More important than ever, somehow. So I reached out to my favorite storytelling podcast and one of my heroes, frankly. I'm sorry, Kevin Allison, I hope that's not too over the top. Just to see if they'd want to use me this episode. And to my great surprise, they said okay. And I am so honored. You honestly just have no idea. I'm so pleased to be here. And looking through the options, the as yet untold stories to potentially present this episode, it started to feel kind of important to stick to subjects I sort of knew, ones more familiar to me than not, just to keep it real. And what I found myself drawn to were these young religious stories, sort of parent adjacent, which was kind of a surprise because I don't know. I don't see myself that way so much these days, but I was a religious kid. But I've long identified as an adult as a fierce agnostic, really, just unreasonably tethered to the belief that I have no idea, none whatsoever, not really. And an agnostic's just an atheist with an open mind.
And
an honest person.
An honest person, that's right. The truth is...
Yes, sir, Bob, you are an honest man, Mr. Nelson.
I can't help it if I'm an honest person.
You know, you got your faith on the one hand, and then there's the truth, whatever that may be. That's how I've been looking at it anyway. I have a lot of reverence for those three little words.
I don't know! I don't know!
I don't know.
I don't know, and...
I don't know. I'm not smart enough. I'm really just not. That's not even three words I'm just realizing. So my big positioning statement just proved my point. Three little words, three or four actually, because don't's a contraction of do and not. So you can see I am wrong all of the time. And my pet peeve these days is misinformation, hands down. So I am not going to try and tell you what's up. Not at all. But I sure would have when I was young. Yes, for sure I would have, and I was a good kid too. I'm not throwing anyone under the bus here, I'm just saying. But I was the kid who would follow his cousins around and just make sure everything was on the up and up, you know. And as long as everyone was behaving, I would participate. And at Grandma's house on my mom's side, which is where all this religious business originated, when family got together for the holidays, me and the cousins would disappear down to the basement to rehearse puppet shows to put on for our parents upstairs. Or we'd set something up, one thing or another, for them to come down and take a little tour of, you know, with great pomp and circumstance. And great showmanship. We were kids, you know, and on these two consecutive Christmas Eves, Christmas Eve services were concocted by my cousins and I for just down at the bottom of the stairs. And that's where I imagine this first story taking place, the one I'm supposedly leading up to here. It's a tale of a sleepover. And don't sleepovers usually take place in sleeping bags in a basement somewhere? See, I'm on track. We're getting there. And that's where we lived when the parents were all upstairs conversing or cooking or wrapping presents for the next morning at Christmas time in the basement. We'd brought the dining room chairs down from the kitchen, I remember, and footstools for the little ones and set everything up theater style for pews in front of the old couch down there, and I'd constructed an altar of old milk crates covered over with beach towels, orange and yellow. They had a lot of old milk crates for some reason. And Grandpa had once been a mustard salesman, so our altar was sponsored by this company in a sense, the logo inescapable and bright reds and yellows on the towels. But now he was a summer camp superintendent, and flashlights were in abundance, so two flashlights flicked on, pointed straight up into the rafters from this makeshift altar, where they stood balanced like candles, with an open Bible just in between. And my cousins and my little brother planned out an invocation, or the processional, or whatever it's called, and the songs we'd sing. We planned out a whole service that way. I imagine I steered them away from the likes of Rudolph and Frosty towards something more churchy, like Away in a Manger, probably Silent Night. So there were hymns, softly sung as the worshipers took their seats, and I took it upon myself, or was tasked with the responsibility, one, to write and deliver a sermon. This was when I was in the first grade. At least 10 family members arranged themselves around these makeshift accommodations and listened to a 7-year-old's thoughts on their holy book, the Bible. Numerous and paper-thin as they were, I'm sure. And then we all sang some Christmas carols and retired upstairs to the main floor of my grandparents' very modest home there in the woods where they lived the years they served as superintendents of the Christian summer camp. their little church ran up there in the Missouri Hills.
That's my name.
Here's Jaina Fisher, and she can top that.
I was raised evangelical Christian, which most of the time made me feel superior to everyone, but sometimes gave me this complex that if I didn't believe exactly the right things, I would go to H-E-W hockey sticks. So I tried to be like the best Christian possible. And by the time I was 11, I had created this tight little Christian friend group with my best friends, Molly and Haley. Molly was a goody two shoes and glasses who went to church with me. Haley, because her parents could afford to buy her clothes from Delia's, she was almost one of the popular kids at school, but I was such a good Christian that I had convinced her to come to church with us too. The newest addition to our friend group was Mallory. Mallory was Pentecostal, which meant her church practiced speaking in tongues. Now, you might have seen like a televangelist lay a hand on someone and they start speaking this made-up language that sounds like gibberish. They'd say that's a real way to talk to God, but my parents told me that anyone who spoke in tongues was brainwashed by a cult. One night, the four of us were having a sleepover at Haley's house. We stayed up after her mom went to bed. We stayed up late, in the dark, talking about God. We had all accepted Jesus as our Lord and Savior, but Mallory said her salvation happened in two parts. First, she'd accepted Christ, and then she had spoken in tongues. She was so pleased with herself, but I was just really confused. Did this mean Mallory was going to hell? Did it mean I was going to hell because I'd never done it? And then, to my surprise, Molly admitted she used to go to a church where adults spoke in tongues. Haley was saying she was so worried that her mom wasn't saved at all because her mom only went to church on Christmas and Easter. And I was sitting there wondering, with all of these different definitions of salvation, how are we supposed to know we're saved at all? Then Molly started prophesying. By prophesying, I mean this tween started speaking like a little cult leader. Like, she was improvising a sermon and she laid her hands on our heads and said, "Have faith, have faith, have faith." Why didn't Molly get to prophesy? Mallory had her head bowed and was speaking tongues to herself in the corner. It looked so natural to her, so cool. Molly told Haley that, yeah, her mom was actually going to hell and that she had to go wake her mom up right now to tell her to repent and accept Jesus. Jesus might come back tomorrow and then it would be too late. Haley was shaken, but she ran off into the dark to go confront her mom. I was worried about Haley's mom too, but mostly I was jealous that Molly and Mallory were clearly such better Christians than me. Being a Jesus freak was supposed to be the thing that I was the best at. So upset that I started to cry. My lips started to quiver, and if I made sobs out loud, it started to sound like something. Is that tongues? That maybe this is the moment that I'm open enough to God to be saved for real. I gave myself over and let go. All kinds of noises came out of me. Noises I hadn't really intended to make, but noises that were small and quiet like me. Molly and Mallory noticed and they hugged me, so proud of me. And for the first time, I felt completely sure of my salvation. Then Haley came back into the room with her mom trailing behind her. Apparently her mom wasn't so happy that she'd been woken up in the middle of the night by her 11-year-old daughter to be told she was going to hell. It's brought some reality back to the situation. I mean, maybe God wasn't speaking through Molly after all. We were all disappointed and went to bed. With some time and some distance from that strange evening, I decided I'd made the whole thing up. I wrote my friends a letter to tell them that I had succumbed to peer pressure and I'd faked speaking in tongues to fit in, but I wasn't going to join their little cult. It didn't help my friendships, but it did restore my sense of superiority.
So there's this man at the gates of heaven. St. Peter asks him his faith. He says Methodist, so St. Peter right away says, let's go this way, and the two of them start to walk down a long, bright hallway. On their way, one assumes, to the Methodist wing of heaven. And along the way, they pass an open door to a room full of people singing and shouting for joy. And looking in, the man asks St. Peter who they are. He's kind of hoping, you know. These are the Lutherans, he learns. So they keep walking. Another door, another big party. Same question. These are the Presbyterians. These are the, you name it. And eventually, they come to a closed door, and it's very quiet. And the man wonders what's on the other side. And St. Peter whispers, quiet, please. These are the Baptists. They think they're the only ones here. Now you can sub in different religions, different denominations for this really old joke, but the point remains the same. Those poor girls is the point. Worried about whether or not they're really going to go to heaven. Or what? Be tortured to death for the rest of their afterlives. And all based on half-remembered ideals heard from grown-ups who know about as much about it as they do, really. Nothing. I spent a lot of time worrying about this at a young age, based on grown-ups without the courage to look inside themselves and acknowledge the fact that really they had no idea. You just have to wonder. And what's so wrong with that? And I can laugh about it now, but I was angry about it for years. It's why I really love people who can look me in the eye and say, I don't know. Here's a 21st century way of looking at it. Religious people who claim to know things based on visions or prayer or how many books they've read or the traditions of their forefathers, they're no better than artificial intelligence gathering basic facts and theories online to half-ass a weak guess and present it as fact without even a proper introduction. Something along the lines of, well, no one can be really sure. I recognized myself in Jaina in that last story, especially when she got to her conclusion about feeling superior. Of course I know that feeling. It could feel really good as an insulated oddball who rarely felt anything but inferior, really. A little moral superiority can go a long way to balance some of that out, but it's dangerous. You should know that. And ultimately, it's not a great way to go through life for anyone. Modesty. Humility is key. And a lot of Christians know this. I don't want to paint everyone with the same brush. My dad was a Christian, and he was honest with me about most things. When I got older, I challenged him gently on the propriety of insisting religious beliefs upon children. And he was sympathetic, actually. And while he remained steadfast in his faith, he was always up for a good debate with me. I really miss my dad. And yes, I've gone from feeling morally superior about religious matters to feeling intellectually somehow, though I have no right to. I don't want to be the atheist looking down his nose at a person who's found spirituality or religion, if they're not making it a problem for anyone else, of course, and acts like he knows better. I'm just saying I'm humbled before whatever or whoever made this existence and wouldn't dare put a name to it. How disrespectful would that be? I remain in awe, eyes closed and mouth shut. I guess God might have your number, but you for sure don't know the name of God.
Hey, folks, it's Kevin. I'm just breaking in here for a little ad break. But you want to know how you could avoid these in the future? It's easy. Just be like Aida Golenkotsi, who just joined our Patreon at the Kink Camper level. Isn't she great? You could do the same at patreon.com/risk. Now let's get back to the episode, I Don't Know, with our guest host, John Nelson.
God might have your number, but you for sure don't know the name of God. That's just me. It's a way for me to talk about religion with my mother now. I'll tell you that. It helps for her to know that, practically, the effect of our very different belief systems produce the same things. It's humanitarianism, an oversimplification, but once you undeify it, that's what's left, essentially. But why do parents do this? Insist these private beliefs on their entire family? Well, I guess it's for the same reason I want to show my kid all my favorite movies and books and press play on every record I ever loved. I've spent my life picking and choosing the best from the rest and want them to benefit from all of this effort. What else do I even have to offer? You know, what else is there? Not much. Not really. We want them to take our lead, pick up where we left off, learn from our mistakes, do as we say, as opposed to how we sometimes actually did things. And that's why this next story feels familiar as well. I get it now, as a parent. I get where Jesse's mom is coming from, for sure. Do as I say, not as I did. I've learned. I went through a bunch of hard work learning. And if you'll just please, for the love of God, G-A-W-D, learn from my mistakes, Jesse Bradley Amore. Take this easy road, this shortcut to wisdom, and listen. Here's Jesse Bradley Amore with a story along those lines here on Risk.
I am 12 years old, and I'm in the middle of watching Darkwing Duck, as you do on the weekday Disney afternoon block. My mother walks into the living room and turns off the TV. And I see in her right hand, she has the NYPD nightstick that we have to fend off intruders from our home. It's this long, about 3 feet long. It's got a ribbed handle. It's wood with a lead cord inside. And in her left hand, she's got this little, like, white square thing, and there's a circle inside, and I don't know what it is. And my mother looks at me, and she goes, Jesse, today, you're going to learn how to put on a condom. A condom. A condom. Just to give you a frame of reference about my mother, my mother was a teenage runaway in the 70s, and she was in the punk rock scene and did a whole bunch of drugs. And at 19, she got pregnant with me, and it ended up saving her life. And I'm 12 years old at this point, and she wants to make sure that I'm not going to go down that same road of having a child too soon. And my mother would do these types of things, like to make sure that I would never go on drugs. She said, Jesse, if I ever catch you doing drugs, I will handcuff you to myself and I will be with you everywhere. And the only drug that she was okay with doing that maybe I could do one day was pot, though she wanted to make sure I didn't tell anybody that she was smoking pot. So my mom goes, if you ever tell anyone that I smoke pot, you will go to a foster home where there will be no Christmas and no one will love you. And all of these things worked. I never told anyone that she smoked pot until now, and now that it's absolutely cool. So my mom wants to make sure that I'm not going to repeat the same mistakes that she's making. So here we are in the living room, and she takes the condom out of the little white square. And she starts rolling it down the handle of the nightstick, and it's a ribbed handle. And my mother looks at me dead in the eye and goes, Don't think you're ever going to be this big. And she rolls down the condom really, really slowly to show that no matter how big something is, condom's going to be able to fit just fine. And she only does it once. And after she's finished, she goes, and that's how you put on a condom. That is how I don't become a grandmother too soon. Flash forward 5 years later. I am 17 years old, and I am finally going to have sex for the first time with my girlfriend. There's Soft Smashing Pumpkins playing in the background, and I have the condom in my hand. And I haven't practiced. I haven't done anything with the condom. I haven't done, you know, like some people practice like kissing in mirrors or with pillows. Some people practice putting on condoms over bananas or even themselves. I haven't done any of this. So this is my first time that I'm putting on a condom. And we're almost there. We're about to have sex for the first time. And I just think about that nightstand. And I think about this rolling down the condom down the handle. Except this time it's me. I'm rolling the condom down me. And I'm just remembering this in my head, and I'm doing I'm tearing out the condom and putting it on, and I look down and I put it on right. And it's a miracle that 5 years, I haven't practiced this 5 years, and I still remember this moment, and everything happens the way that it should. The next morning, I'm having breakfast, and my mom, she looks at me and she can clearly see that I'm no longer a virgin, because my mother, just with her own experience, can just tell. So she looks at me and she goes, Jess, did you get laid? Yes, Mom, I did. Then she asks, did you wear a condom? And there's this pause, like she's waiting for me to tell her whether I did or I didn't. And I go, yes, Mom, I wore a condom. And her right hand goes up and she says, high five. And we high fived. And for a moment, my mother was so proud of me.
Yeah, because that's what we all want, right? Our parents to be proud of us, our kids to learn from our mistakes. It's probably pretty universal. I know I always wanted my dad's respect. That's why I was religious growing up, because Dad was. My faith was very much an extension of his, born out of love. For my dad, that's what I see now looking back. Not my heavenly father, my actual father. I could see it made him happy when I took interest in the sermon, or begged him to buy me the big illustrated Bible on display in the church bookstore. When I got his permission to go to the altar, never for the first time, when the pastor would ask if we felt called to come forward. He was a born again after living blissfully free from all of this, frankly, extreme religion for most of his life, but in a home which was not without its share of misery. As a married man, he finally found religion, and in a major way. His life growing up, though, to me sounded like an ideal wrapped up in a kind of nightmare. His older brother sick for years and from too young an age, his sister depressed, his mother distraught, beside herself. Really, Grandpa working day in and day out, head down, just trying to keep it all together. And no religion, no need for it, in spite of everything. But his wife, when he married her, insisted on church, and so he went. And things, from what I hear, ramped up around the time his beloved older brother finally did die, after living with the specter of death for over half of his and his little brother's young life. Dad really lost himself in religion at that point. And as a child, I was all in, because that's what Dad was, Christian. He'd had his first son, me, and then immediately lost his big brother, who he'd been losing his whole life. And then right when Mom had him another, my little brother, he split. He didn't leave us. He left his life. And I won't say his mind, because I loved my dad and respect him. But when I look at my life,
I see a lot of false starts and wrong turns, and comparatively, his was just a textbook success story. Great jobs right from college, a pretty wife, and two kids in the suburbs. The two-car garage and all that. He achieved the middle class, and this spokesperson for Empire left all of that and took us with him to seminary, where he said God had told him to go. And not only that, but he had the guts to do it. Hell yeah, I respect my dad. I couldn't always see eye to eye with him, but I respected him like crazy. With two babies and a wife dependent, he quit a great job and started over as a seminary student. What the hell? But also, wow, that's conviction. Or something. But then he didn't stay there either, and that's a whole other story. And the truth is, I don't really know enough to tell you. God, it seems, had given him another new command. And that was for all of us to return to the exact same life he'd just torn us all away from. And things were to return to exactly the way they'd been before. Except things were a little different. Now he was, strictly speaking, a man of God. An electrical engineer again, and not a minister, but someone who knew his place in the church. In a way, I assume, from having gotten to know him later in life, really gave him a sense of community and belonging. A sense of identity. All the things I've been searching for my whole life with very limited success. Just the smallest amounts, little tastes here and there. He was feasting during his life, and I was famished. But for many years as a young boy and as a very young man, that was also informing my own sense of identity. Right up until confirmation, ironically. Just a coincidence. That's when I realized it didn't make that much sense. And despite his devotion, he remained remarkably open to debate. And as I grew, my desire to engage with him on these subjects was actually indulged, and I had a junior theologian's worth of education, too, on the subject, so I would hold my own. I could see that's what he thought, anyway, by the way his eye was sparkle. All the way up to the inevitable conclusion, each and every time, where we just agree to disagree, because faith. Because faith, John. That's my name, by the way. I'm John Nelson, hosting this segment for no good reason. That's what my mom would say if I told her about this, which I won't. What good would come from that, she'd wonder. And I do always wonder. I want to be a force for good, so what good can come from this? Well, I guess it's provided the opportunity to showcase a couple of stories which Kevin and company couldn't quite decide what to do with. And I got some things off my chest, too. So speaking of hearing from God and getting messages from God and how mysteriously they come and go and how hard to interpret sometimes, what about this next story, huh? What do you think of this? It's from Stephen Harder, and it's a doozy. Back on track with one from a man who went to seminary, too, just like Dad, except he made it all the way through. Here's Stephen Harder on A Risk.
So after I had graduated Bible college, I was at a real loss as to what I should be doing next. So like most people in that situation, I do the only logical thing and I start applying for youth ministry internships. After I've been doing that for a week or two, my dad tells me that Michael from First Baptist, one of the largest megachurches in the area, called and wanted to set up an interview with me Monday, 10 a.m., which was amazing. So I show up at the church right on time, right at 10 a.m. I walk up to the receptionist and I say that I am here for an internship interview with Michael. And she looks a little bit confused, but she disappears down the hallway and then she returns with a guy. And he says, "You said Michael set up an interview with you?" And I say, yeah. And he tells me that nobody by the name of Michael works there. And confusion just sort of hangs in the air between us. And then he produces the envelope I had dropped off last week, and it's still sealed. And he opens it up, and my resume and my internship application slides out. And he says, "You said someone named Michael had called you?" And I said, "Yeah." And our eyes lock, and we just hold each other's gaze as if, like, breaking eye contact is going to, like, break the spell of this supernatural moment that is possibly unfolding around us in this very moment. We are silently asking ourselves the exact same question. Is this actually happening? Did the archangel Michael from the book of Daniel set up this interview for me on God's behalf? So he brings me into his office and he conducts a perfunctory interview. But we both know that if God set up this interview, nothing I can say should prevent it from coming about. And as I'm leaving his office, he promises me that he's going to put my name forward as a candidate for one of the internship positions. And I am on cloud nine. I go home and I see that there is a voicemail waiting for me. First Gospel is another church in the area where I had dropped off one of my packets. It's much smaller than First Baptist, a lot less glamorous, but I was desperate, so I applied there too. My dad, as it turns out, not so good with details. When he was taking the phone message last week, he got confused and he simply wrote down the wrong church name. So I called Michael back and I thanked him and I told him that I had secured a position elsewhere. But thanks.
Well, I think I know what Dad would have said about that, but I'll keep it to myself for once and just let the story be the story. We're out of time anyway. Thanks to Kevin and John LaSala for their help this episode. I kind of flipped the script a little bit, I think, telling my own stories when all I was tasked with was letting others tell theirs. I had a blast, though, and maybe somebody heard my rants and smiled or nodded just a little. And maybe they thought, well, I guess he went through something similar. Maybe I'm not the only one who remembers all of that. And no, you're not. I see you, buddy. You went through that. We both did. For whatever it was worth. So this was cathartic. For me, at least. Thank you. I hope nobody minded too much my way of doing things this episode. If you liked it, you can find me online. Maybe the host will tell you how. I'm going to practice that humility I mentioned before.
Maybe.
Pretend I'm not dying to tell you how. I'm John Nelson, and this is Risk.
This is Risk. This is DJ Freddie Fresh behind me once again. And over the course of this episode, we heard The Gift of Tongues by Jana Fisher, Object Lesson by Jesse Bradley Amore, and Highly Recommended by Stephen Harder. And everything else was, of course, John Nelson. You can find everything John makes, Radio Retrofit and Some Assembly Required, on WFMU on the Sheena's Jungle Room stream at WFMU.org, and it's all archived on John's site, ahfooey.com. And you can find the storytellers themselves at jennafisher.com, linktree.com/Stephen Harder, and Jesse Bradley Amore is premiering a new solo show at the Philly Fringe this September, so you can check him out at linktree.com/questionabledecisioncomics. All of these links are in the show notes. Well, I love that we were able to do a little something different in this episode, and I'm so grateful to John Nelson for putting it together, and for our own John LaSala for making it happen. Let us know what you think on all the socials. We're at Risk Show, and you can include the hashtag IHeardItOnRisk wherever you post about us. Folks, today's the day. Take a risk.